You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us, and we appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tigers, S as in Sandwich, M as in Mariners. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at underscore Kennedy Miller underscore. Again, that is underscore Kennedy, as in the former NFL offensive lineman Cortez Kennedy Miller, as in the NBA Hall of Famer Reggie Miller, underscore Kennedy Miller underscore.
All right. All right. So today it is March the 2nd, 2022. And I'm just going to let you guys know like a quick story about my main man, Kennedy Miller. I've known Kennedy for a very, very long time. And I must say, he is one of the most optimistic people I've ever met. Something could be going wrong. Ken's like, you know, it's going to be all right. Ken somehow, some way finds a silver lining in the middle of a storm. I don't know how he does it. So during this entire LA Lakers season, I have been trying to tell Ken, I'm like, Ken, I don't think this is going to work. About midway through December, I'm like, Ken, I think this might be a lost season. And Kennedy was trying to tell me, hey, man, I think we get some guys healthy. They don't have their rhythm, this, that, and the third. They can figure it out. But the other day, I got a text from Kennedy. I said, Ken, I watched the Lakers Pelicans game, and it was atrocious. He said, I ain't even watched that shit because I'm done with those. So, Kennedy Miller, tell me why today you are officially finished with the LA Lakers as a team, as a roster, and as a crew.
I tried all year, you know, to find out what was wrong, what is going to be needed to fix this team, how this team can still be competitive. And it just does not seem that all of this will be put together. Number one, at this point, you are 6 or 7 games under 500. You're not even winning the games that you're supposed to win. It'd be different if you were only losing to contenders. But most nights, you don't even have the effort to beat teams that you're supposed to beat. And, you know, being on social media, being a part of Lakers Twitter, everybody wants to put the blame solely on one person, whether it be Russell Westbrook, whether it be Frank Vogel, whether it be Rob Pelinka, whether it be LeBron for signing off on these things, whether it be Anthony Davis for always getting hurt. And my thing is, it's a combination of all these things. Coming into the year, you brought in 11 new guys. You only brought in 3 returning guys. You brought in 11 new guys to this roster. Kendrick Nunn played in preseason. And since then, he has the biggest bruise I've ever seen in my life, because he has not stepped foot on a floor in an NBA regular season game yet. You brought in 11 new guys, and your initial starting 5 that started the first night against the Golden State Warriors, 2 of those guys are not even in the rotation. And frankly, should not have been in the rotation at that point in time. You bring in 11 new guys, and you see that it is not working. And most years we've seen, specifically LeBron James-led teams, if it's not working, we're blowing it up come All-Star break. You don't do a single thing for the trade deadline, because you do not want to trade your 2027 first-round pick. Do I blame you to a certain extent? No, I don't blame you. But you don't do anything. Then they say, well, we're just waiting until the buyout. Well, then you got guys on the buyout like Goran Dragic. You got guys on the buyout like DeAndre Bembry, who could have helped you. Both of those guys could have helped you. Do you make a move for either of those? No, you don't. The move that is the biggest move that I've seen that this team has made is they just got DJ Augustine and Winyon Gabriel.
Wait. Hold on. Who? Winyon who?
Winyon Gabriel and DJ Augustine, because they waived DeAndre Jordan. This feels like a lost season. If I was the Lakers, I would really consider shutting LeBron down, especially with Anthony Davis being out another 4 to 5 weeks. Because, I mean, at this point, what are we really playing for here? playing for a play-in spot, and then what, you losing five games to Phoenix? And I want to think in the back of my head, oh, well, you know, if they're fully healthy by the time they get there and they play Phoenix, it's going to be pretty tough. But what has led me to believe that they'll be fully healthy over these past 2 years? LeBron has not been healthy, and Anthony Davis has not been healthy. LeBron is having apparently a chronic knee problem, which he says is just like his ankle problem last year, where it's not going to get better until pretty much after the season's over because he doesn't have time to rest. Since he said that, which is post All-Star break, he does not look the same. He looks a step slow. Frank Vogel, I don't know. I thought he should have been fired maybe, what, 20 games ago? He clearly, and I don't like to criticize coaches because obviously I am a coach, so it's a lot tougher than people think. And I'm not saying I have the magic formula here, but I just don't understand why it's been so much roster. Like, the lineups have been different. Like, why can't you just have one big and Anthony Davis and LeBron James? Like, why is it LeBron has to play center, or then we have to play DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard? Like, it's like you're going to the extremes on both sides. Well, why can't you just have a traditional lineup and have, you know, Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, LeBron, Malik Monk, Russell Westbrook? Like, I really just don't get it. Then, I mean, you couple that with all the times that, you know, like I said, LeBron and AD have been out, but you couple that with, you know, at one point they had six guys out at the same time due to COVID. Then they're signing players on 10-day deals, Isaiah Thomas, Stanley Johnson, who's turned out to be a really nice find for them, but he can't score. Isaiah Thomas, Stanley Johnson, Darren Collison, all of this rock turnover. And like I said, you're not even winning the games that you're supposed to. So there, I've lost total hope. I thought maybe post All-Star break, which gave them, you know, a week off and maybe like two practices, you know, they would get some footing, and defensively they were a little bit better. But Anthony Davis goes down again before All-Star break, the game before All-Star break. And then, you know, you drop games that you should have won. You should have beat Golden State and Golden State. You should have beat the Clippers. You should have beat, I'm not going to say you should have beat the Mavericks the other night, but you could have beat the Mavericks the other night. And there's one more game that is escaping my head. But games that you should win, that you had the opportunity to win down the stretch. But for a team as old as you are to be this far into the season and to not kind of understand how to win those games is baffling to me.
I'm looking at the Lakers' next handful of games. I'm going to read them out to you. They got the Clippers tomorrow night.
Loss.
Golden State Saturday night.
Loss.
At San Antonio.
Loss. Take them off TV, by God.
At Houston.
Maybe a win. I went to the game when they played at Houston, and they barely won out.
Washington at home.
Maybe a win.
I shouldn't even say this one because they're going to get their teeth kicked out of their ass. At Phoenix.
That's going to be ugly. That's going to get ugly, Alex.
So, you know, one thing I've been thinking about with, you know, LeBron James and his tenure with the Lakers is this is the second out of his 4 years there where the roster that they have put around him has been poorly constructed. That roster they gave him year one was just weird, right? Like Rajon Rondo, Lonzo Ball, a whole lot of guys that like ball handlers. And we all know LeBron plays his best basketball, and what unlocks his best talent is when he's around shooters, because that then allows him to pass the ball. Right? So that first year with all those ball handlers, it didn't quite work. Do I think they would have made the playoffs anyway? Yeah, LeBron got hurt with the groin, and then it just everything, LeBron and Lonzo Ball both got hurt. Then it all went downhill, right? Last year, I feel like the roster, they had a good roster. I feel like they had a very good basketball team. They were rolling last year. Injuries happen. Everybody gets hurt. It all falls apart. And now this year, I didn't think they needed to make such a drastic move like going out and acquiring Russell Westbrook. I think they really could have made a few tweaks to the roster, probably get rid of KCP, get rid of maybe Kuzma and Montrezl Harrell, get back a couple of other, you know, get a couple of veterans, some make a few free agent signings and some acquisitions, and they'd be in nearly the same spot. Like, think about this. This year, they're paying Russell Westbrook $44.2 million. How many good rotation players could they sign with that $44 million that they're paying Russell Westbrook right now?
They can sign a good amount. I was just talking to somebody about this earlier as far as, well, they asked, well, Kennedy, what changes would you have made realistically? What would you have done this offseason to improve the Lakers? Number one, I would have kept Alex Caruso because it is reported by all accounts that he was willing to take less money to come back to the Lakers, and they basically just said, no, we don't want you anymore, which was foolish. I would have tried to get both big men back that helped me win a championship in 2020 in JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard. A lot of people have criticized me because they said that I endorsed this Russell Westbrook trade, which I did. I did. But my thinking also was, okay, well, I'm endorsing this trade as long as we get the proper floor spaces around, which I thought we were going to get Buddy Hield as well. And so if we got Buddy Hield, I would have been more okay with the outcome of this. Did not work. I would have tried to get Buddy Hield, though, because that was the initial trade before the Russell Westbrook trade. So if we get Alex Caruso, we get Buddy Hield, we get JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard back, and then you fill the roster with, you know, solid 3-and-D role players, because you already had a couple. You had Reeves, you had AD. I mean, you know, AD is already on there. If you could fill it out, I can't remember who all were the wings that signed this free agency. But if you can get some wings to fill that up, then I think you have a very competent basketball team. I think you have a team that can compete and it's got good depth and good pieces around LeBron and Anthony Davis. But trading for Russell Westbrook, I don't know why they felt they needed to make such a splash. And my thing is, again, if you're going to make that splash, you got to make sure you put the proper pieces around it. You can't play Russell Westbrook, Talen Horton-Tucker, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis in at the same time. And don't put Dwight Howard in the game, too, because who can shoot the ball?
They're out there looking like the Memphis Grizzlies, circa 2015.
And my thing is, like, you know, like, I think Russ is getting a little bit too much of an unfair thing. Like, oh, this would have never worked. You know, LeBron and Russell Westbrook would have never worked. I disagree with that. I think both at their peak, you know, if they played with each other in 2013 or 2014, they would have worked just because their athleticism would have just been too much for other teams to handle. But because Russell Westbrook's athleticism has diminished, also along with his free throw shooting, also along with his mid-range jump shot, it allows teams to put bigger guards or wings more on Russell Westbrook and just say, well, either you're going to have to beat me shooting, and if you drive it, I know that you're not going to go over the top. So we're going to have these bigger wings on you and force you to make decisions. My thing with the Lakers is, and you said it, they didn't need to do all of this. Like, ever since they won that championship in 2020, they literally went away from the type of team that won that championship year by year. That 2020 team was big. They were physical and they played defense. That's the one team that, you know, most people are like, well, LeBron needs shooters. That was the one team that couldn't really score that well, but they were a consensus top three defensive team in the league all year long. And they gave opponents hell because you had JaVale, Dwight, LeBron, AD, even your guards were bigger. Caruso, 6'3". You had Caldwell Pope. You had Kuzma, who's 6'9", 6'10". You had all this length and athleticism. And ever since then, it's like, okay, well, we won, so let's try and get prettier. You know, let's get Dennis Schroeder. Let's get Montrezl Harrell. Let's get Marc Gasol. You know, let's get these pieces, which, again, to your point, if we go back and listen to the podcast last year, I liked that team last year. I think that they could have competed. They were up 2-1 on a team that went to the finals. And if Anthony Davis' groin hadn't fell off the bone, I think they would have won the series. I do. I think they would have won that series because it just felt like they were – when they won that second game, it felt like Phoenix was one more game away from just being shut down. And they were playing well in that game, and Anthony Davis got hurt because Phoenix was winning. I won't take that away from them. But I don't think that Phoenix is reeling off three straight with a healthy LeBron and AD.
I think that the Lakers should have accounted for is that, Kennedy, I believe like 2.5 years ago when the Rockets made the trade to go get Russell Westbrook, I'm pretty doggone sure. I'd have to go back and listen to the audio where I said I wasn't sure if Russell Westbrook was finished or not, right? Mm-hmm. Russell Westbrook proved mm-hmm. me wrong that year. But my whole thinking was, we're talking about a player that his game is primarily predicated upon athleticism, right? And that players who come into the league and their game is built on their athletic ability. At some point during their career, they have to evolve once your athleticism begins to diminish. So if we think about Ray Allen went from kind of high flyer to dead eye shooter.
Correct.
Vince Carter went from probably one of the greatest in-game dunkers we've ever seen to dead eye shooter. Extended his career probably 7-8 years by doing things like that. And there are countless other, you know, examples of that. If you can never adjust your game and move your game away from being so built around your athletic ability, when it falls off, it's going to fall off. So do you remember when we were kids when this happened, but Allen Iverson was like out of the league in 2 years. Once he wasn't faster mm-hmm. than dudes and he couldn't get to the bucket and he was short and he couldn't shoot, it was a wrap.
Yep.
With Russ is, he can't shoot and he's not as fast as he once was.
Yep.
So
because
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, you got it, man.
No, I mean, I was just going to say, unlike those players that you are naming, the things that Russell Westbrook should have gotten better at as he's gotten older, he's gotten worse at. When he was in his athletic peak, he had the little mid-range, little stop and pop right above the free throw line, and it was basically money. He used to shoot 85% from the free throw line. So now, even if your athleticism dwindled, you still have a go-to shot, and if you're getting to the foul line, you're knocking, you know, close to 9 out of 10 free throws. But if you're shooting 69% or 70% from the free throw line, you're not high flying above the rim and you're not making mid-range shots, I really don't have to guard you that well.
Now, my next question is, looking forward, because if we both agree that this is a lost season, we have to start looking forward. What do the Lakers do from here? Because the majority of that roster are on league minimum contracts. Mm-hmm. So, in next year, they've got LeBron James locked in, Anthony Davis locked in. Russell Westbrook has a player option for $47 million, and ain't no way in hell he passing that up. So, you're probably bringing back those three guys again. What about next year is going to be any different? Like, is my big question. You know, you also have Kendrick Nunn back. Hopefully, his bone bruise is healed.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's taking up all of the mid-level exception that we have.
Yep.
We literally gave all of our mid-level exception to a guy that has not played a regular season game yet.
And he's got a player option, too, and he's definitely opting into that.
Absolutely, as he needs to. The thing with Russell Westbrook is what I'm under the assumption of why the trade did not go through to send him to Houston and for the Lakers to get back John Wall and possibly even Christian Wood was that they did not want to include that 2027 first-round pick. And they are more willing to go into the summer with it and then have the option of using the 2029 first round pick as well to either try and get a better deal or to have that pick as backup just in case you have to trade Russell Westbrook with the 2027 pick. Now, I did see some sources today that said that, you know, Russell Westbrook and the Lakers, you know, are possibly looking to mutually find him another home somewhere this offseason. But I think to your point is the question is where, and the better way to word it, who would take that? Was it 44 or 47
next year? I mean, he's a player option for next season for $47 million.
Who would take $47 million of Russell Westbrook? First of all, because it's been clear and evident that nobody is doing the Lakers any favors. Nobody is giving them, you know, Pau Gasol for Kwame Brown and a baby Marc Gasol. You know what I mean? Oh, nobody's yeah. doing that anymore for the Lakers because Jerry West is not in office as a guy that in Rob Pelinka, who most front office people do not like. Now, one little tidbit that I wanted to add that might help them. Luol Deng is finally off the books this summer. We finally done boy, paying Lou Aldang.
He was on the Bobby Bonilla plan. Shout out to Lou Aldang. Get your money.
Shout out to Lou Aldang. You got your money, young man. But you know, it is going to be interesting to see what they do and if they can find a new home for Russell Westbrook and how they work to try and construct a roster in year five around LeBron and AD. I hope that they can see that there is a formula to success. You want to get some two-way guys that are active defenders. Obviously want shooters. Every team wants shooters. And then, you know, Anthony Davis doesn't want to play the five in the regular season. So you want to get two rim running bigs that can play the five mostly in the regular season until the playoffs to keep his body intact.
Look, Anthony Davis' body is never going to be intact. I think that's just something everybody just got to live with. Like, buddy, like, and I think I told you this probably about a year ago. I just mentioned it, like, just kind of offhand. I said Anthony Davis needs to be load managed the same way Kawhi Leonard needs to be load managed. Physically, Anthony Davis cannot play every night. His body his body can't handle it.
I remember watching the Denver Broncos when Peyton Manning came, and every time he fell, I got like nervous. Like it just didn't look right when he went to the ground. And I'm starting to get that way with Anthony Davis. Like every time he goes down or every time like he's like awkward, I'm like, okay, what now? This is his sixth injury this year. And I mean, you know, some of it, I feel like he gets like unfair criticism because, you know, he can't determine if he gets hurt. Some of it is just bad luck. Like the last injury, if anybody lands on somebody's foot, they're most likely going to turn their ankle like that. So some of it is just bad luck, but it's just very unfortunate a player of that caliber, because we all know how talented he is.
Oh, yeah.
He's a player that, like I always say, like if you just put somebody in a gym and just had them, you know, just do basketball workouts and train, he probably looked like a top five player in an empty gym just because of all the stuff that he can do at his size with how mobile he is. But just seeing him not be able to hold up for, you know, majority of NBA regular seasons is just very unfortunate because you see all the talent that he brings to the table.
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely. But, you know, look, I don't want to say the best part about this is there's other interesting stuff going on in the league. The Clippers, somehow, I have no idea how the Clippers are above 500. I have no clue. How? Like, given Kawhi ain't playing this year. Like, I don't care what nobody tells you. He ain't playing.
No, he's not.
Paul George has missed a good portion of the season with different injuries. And somehow, like, credit to T. Lou. They're still out there balling. Memphis has become – Memphis is a thing now.
I was just about to say, I think Ty Lue has overtaken Greg Popovich as best coach in the league.
Ooh, man, that's a – okay.
I do.
Kind of get with that. Okay.
I think he's taking over Greg Popovich as the best coach in the league because what he's doing with that roster, another blunder that the Lakers messed up because you didn't want to give Ty Lue an extra year on his contract, an NBA champion, by the way, that went to four straight finals. You was trying to chump change the man. So now he's at your rival team and he's beating the shit out of y'all. They beat him like 30 of the last 37 times or something like that. But what he's done and what that organization has done. I'm going to tell you this. The rest of the West better be happy that Kawhi and PG are not healthy. Because if they, you know, were magically to be put healthy on this team going into the playoffs with the Clippers being the eighth seed, they're beating Phoenix. I would put money that they would beat Phoenix with the roster that they have.
But man, look, I was telling people last playoffs in the conference finals, I said, man, Kawhi Leonard is healthy. Clippers going to the finals. Period. They're going to struggle. And like, let's say this. Given if the Lakers had the Clippers fight and Ty Lue, this would probably be going a whole lot better.
Well, I mean, part of it really irks me because this is how I know people don't want to do deals with the Lakers. They got Robert Covington and Norman Powell for Eric Bledsoe and a pick. There's no way the Lakers could give a player the equivalent of Eric Bledsoe, a poor man's Russell Westbrook at this point, to get two quality 3-and-D guys that could have helped the Lakers this year. The Lakers probably should have went after.
It's a lost season for the Lakers, and Kennedy Miller is very sad. But we got to leave it right there. But we'll be right back with more of the Game Plan Podcast on the other side of the break. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Grambling State embarrassing the hell out of themselves trying to hire Art Briles. All that and more when we come back. Don't go too far. All right, so Kennedy Miller, you know HBCUs have a special place in my heart, and I always want my HBCU football programs and athletic programs to always do their absolute best, get your shine.
Yes, sir.
All of that, right? So Grambling hired Hugh Jackson a few months back. So I'm like, all right, former NFL head coach, quarterback guru, the whole nine yards. This is going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say Hugh Jackson is off to an inauspicious start. Hugh Jackson tried to hire Art Briles, y'all. And let's just say that didn't go over very well. Art Briles was officially announced to be the offensive coordinator at Grambling on a Thursday. By Monday of this week, Art Briles said, you know what? I'm cool. Y'all got it. Now, this would have been Art Briles' first job in college football since he got fired at Baylor in 2016. A few other places have tried to hire Art Briles. Southern Miss and Jay Hobson tried to hire Art Briles at Southern Mississippi. The president, the provost, everybody's like, are you out of your mind? So that didn't work. Art Briles tried to get a job in the CFL. Some blowback happened. Pulled out of that job. Art Briles ended up going to Italy for a couple years and coaching. Then he ended up coaching high school football in Mount Vernon, Texas for 2 years. Apparently the team went to the playoffs. They went 20-6, whole nine yards. But, you know, so a few things on this, right? If Grambling was going to hire Art Briles, they needed to have one thing in order. They needed to have the right people in their corner that would defend them on something like this. And by the right people, I mean the right person, and that right person being Doug Williams. Like, when I think of Grambling, I think of Doug Williams and Eddie Robinson. That's it. So apparently the athletic director, Hugh Jackson, the president, the provost, all the people brought this to Doug Williams and like, Doug, we think this is going to be the move we want to make. Should we do this? And Doug Williams unequivocally was like, no, this is a bad idea. And they went and did it anyway. And then someone asked Doug Williams about it. Like, what do you think about this? I think this is a terrible idea. I told them not to do this. In this situation, Doug Williams is kind of like Jay Prince. You know, like when Jay Prince says you stop doing something, you stop. Jay Prince tells you to stop beefing, you stop beefing. Jay Prince right. tells somebody at the Sauce Twins concert to give Steve Francis his chain back. That chain better be returned expeditiously. Otherwise, you face the repercussions from James Prince.
Yep.
So that's one thing. And secondly, did you really need Art Briles to run Art Briles' system? Right now, as much as football coaches are copycats, and I believe coaches in general, Kennedy Miller, you can, you know, kind of tap in on this. Coaches, y'all some copycats. Y'all copy what other coaches.
Those are the best coaches.
So I feel like it's reasonable to say that to run Art Briles' system, you don't necessarily need Art Briles there on staff getting a check to do so. Right.
Correct.
Now, could Grambling, I've seen the point made where Grambling could have hired like a previous Art Briles assistant or something like that. I'm like, well, first off, most of them Art Briles assistants. Like, funny thing is, a lot of them have jobs, like still have jobs in the Power Five. So like Jeff Lebby, Art Briles' son-in-law, who was on that Baylor staff, he's the offensive coordinator now at Oklahoma. Kendall Briles, Art Briles' son, who was just as complicit and, you know, really not caring about the kind of behavior their players were engaging in. He's the offensive coordinator at Arkansas, right? The athletic director at the time. He got a job like a year later at Liberty. So there's that. But weren't none of them Art Briles' assistants, mainly white men, going to take their asses to Grambling, Louisiana, unless they absolutely had to. Art Briles wouldn't have even ever considered going to Grambling unless he absolutely had to. Out of just pure desperation. And Art Briles is in a place of pure desperation. So that's why the only reason he would have ever considered doing something like that, right?
Yes, sir.
And lastly,
wholeheartedly agree.
My big point, right? I feel like Hugh Jackson viewed Art Briles the same way Art Briles viewed those players he had at Baylor. Art Briles wasn't looking for good people. Art Briles was looking for good players. Hugh Jackson wasn't necessarily looking for a good person. Hugh Jackson was looking for a great play caller, right? And I think that's like endemic of American society. We really don't care what your malfunctions are, what your hangups are. As long as you can show up to work and do your job effectively, you can be doing whatever else in your personal life. So like, think about it. Deshaun Watson is accused in 24 lawsuits of being a sexual degenerate. And somebody this offseason is going to trade the house, the cars, the kids, and the dog for that man. Why? Because they're not looking for a good person. They're looking for a great player, a great worker. Think about it. Jerry Jones got rid of Greg Hardy in Dallas. Not because Greg Hardy was a bad person. It's because Greg Hardy couldn't show up to work on time. Right? Am I making any sense here?
No, you're making total sense.
Man, I just want to know what they were thinking. Like, if this was going to be the decision you were going to make, you will have to stand with it and rock with it. If not, you just drug your name through the mud for 5 days as of Art Briles as your offensive coordinator?
Because, I mean, like you said, I'm pretty sure it's plenty of people that are very experienced in running the same system that Art Briles ran. So it's no point. It makes no sense for you to go and get him. Like, it's so many younger coaches, younger African-American coaches, and it just kind of just puts a taint on the program. Just like, okay, well, you know, it doesn't matter what lengths we'll go to try and have some success. Like, you know, like if my kid is a recruit and being recruited by them, and you know, you guys end up hiring Art Briles, like, okay, this what y'all doing with all the baggage you got? I understand people, you know, people deserve second chance and all that stuff, but this man had a terrible culture that lasted at Baylor. And for you to be the one that gives him a job is just, and this is Hugh Jackson's first college job, am I not mistaken?
He was the OC at Tennessee State last year under Eddie George.
Yes.
But this is his first college head coaching job, yes.
Right. For you to try and come out with a bang with this, it's just like, come on, man. This is not the way that you try and give, you know, a storied historical black college some notoriety.
And here's the other thing. Like, Hugh made such a mess of this. And here's my question. Where is the sports information director? Where is he? Who is he? Because, yo, why was he not prepared? Like, you got Hugh Jackson putting out statements on his foundation's letterhead. And,
right.
Like, and then the statement is poorly read. It's just, oh my God, that statement was so bad. Right? Like, this is what you pay your SID for. This is why you have a sports information director. Right here. And he ain't doing his job. And now, and I don't know if you saw this or not, somebody looked up the tax reports on Hugh Jackson's charity, and they are talking about their 100, you know, talking about expenses. They have one employee. They've spent $4,000 on, you know, their actual mission. And it sounds like Hugh Jackson been out here committing tax fraud. Hugh Jackson out here pulling some Clay Davis type stuff, and now he got people looking in his books.
Exactly. I saw that, but I wasn't totally educated, so I didn't want to speak on it because I didn't know what it was, but I was like, Hugh, man, what are you doing?
There's no worse way to start a tenure than like that, right? And anytime a university has to defend who they hired, the public probably has a point. Last year when Urban Meyer tried to hire Chris Doyle, and he said, we vetted him and this, that, and the third. What does vetting actually mean? No one actually asked that question, right? Like, and the Grambling State AD, he said he vetted Art Briles, looked him up for 10 days, whatever the case happened to be. It doesn't take 10 days to find those lawsuits. It don't take 10 days to find those reports. Like, what is your vetting process? How does this go? And why, when Doug Williams told you, don't do this, What made you think this was gonna go well if he told you not to do this?
Foolish.
Hey, man, I hope it works out for Grambling. I really do. Except when they play us in the State Fair Classic. But, I mean, I ain't going front. PV all the way, baby. But, we are out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast. I'm Kennedy Miller, my man. I got to thank you for hanging out with me once again. Where can the folks find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. And that's _Kennedy, as in the former North Carolina basketball player Kennedy Meeks. Miller, as in the former NBA 3-point marksman Mike Miller. _KennedyMiller_.
All right. All right. Thank you, sir. You can find me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin, TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin, TSM. That's T as in Tom, S as in Sarah, M as in Margaret. Follow the show on Twitter at The G Plan Pod. Again, that's at The G Plan Pod. Holla at us. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. For Kennedy Miller, my name is Alex Goodwin. This has been the Game Plan Podcast, and we will see you guys next time.